Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Alaska, and on the line, calling in from Rapid City, South Dakota, down there for a school tour and a talk at the local Cabela's. Hugh Neff, Hugh, how's it going?
Good, Robert. It's good to hear the entry song. I haven't heard the dogs howling in a couple days.
Oh, yeah. So how's it going down there?
I'm doing my sleep deprivation training. So I spent all day yesterday flying through Seattle and Salt Lake to get here. Got here yesterday afternoon and did two talks today. I've got the presentation right now we're getting set up for here at Cabela's in Rapid City. And then I have one more talk in the morning at Amanda's school, Grandview. And then I'll be on a plane another hour after that and back in Fairbanks tomorrow night at about 2 in the morning.
I know you go down there just about every December. What's the lure down there? Why do you like to head to South Dakota?
Well, let me introduce Amanda first. I met her, what year was that?
About 5 years ago.
So Amanda I met at the Iditarod picnic, and she's been my organizer. And I love coming to Rapid because her family, they call me Cousin Hugh, and they always show me a good time. We head up to the Black Hills, go to Deadwood, go to Crazy Horse, a lot of amazing history to this area of the country. And then, of course, the kids around here are really into dog mush. And I was in a class today where all the kids had made their individualized dog houses that they had on their desks. So that was pretty neat.
Cool. Very cool. And, Amanda, welcome to the show. Can you tell our listeners who you are and what you're all about?
Well, my name is Amanda Price, and I am a fourth-grade teacher here in Rapid City. And like you said, I met him when I went up to the Iditarod Teacher Conference that the Iditarod and ExxonMobil put on every July. And I asked him about 5 years ago, what is it going to take to get you here to South Dakota? And he told me, and we did it. And we started small by raising money by selling gum. The kids sold gum for 25 cents each piece to other kids in the school, and we were able to raise enough money to bring Hugh from South Dakota. We used Hugh. He has a lot of wonderful things to say to the kids that the kids really need to hear. Goes along with our character count pillars, respect, responsibility, all of those great pillars. He really drives it home for us. So we're able to use what he says to the kids in that capacity, but then we also use the Iditarod website. We've tracked the mushers. We research, each child researches a musher. They follow that musher throughout the entire Iditarod. They determine how far that musher's gone, how much further they have to go. Eventually, throughout the race, then they start to wonder how much longer until the musher gets to where they need to be. They have to take into account the weather. They have to take into account all the different elements that might come into play, the terrain, and they start to try to see what would happen on the trail, basically. So.
Or she sort of sounds like a teacher, doesn't she?
Oh, shush.
She does. Amanda, in that curriculum, it truly is a full curriculum for the kids, isn't it? They learn math and science and just about everything, don't they?
They absolutely do. You know, our kids are doing the research when they're researching all the mushers. They are writing an opinion paper, so they take elements of what Hugh has to say, and they combine that with the research that they find both online and in articles, and they come up with an opinion paper, which is going to be taking care of standards for writing, for fourth grade anyways. They are looking at the culture that is involved, the history that's involved in the in the race. They're reading different books within their literature circles that have to do with sled dogs, sled dog racing, mushers, wilderness. So they really are, and, you know, they're using their math skills as they're trying to determine the ETA of the musher, when the musher is going to be coming. They're using those problem-solving skills. It's really a fabulous, fabulous curriculum.
Yep, we have to also mention, Robert, that their daughter just happened to marry a guy who's stationed at Fort Wainwright up in Fairbanks, too. So
he's actually stationed at Eielson.
Or Eielson,
Air Force Base.
Sorry, Eielson. So right here in this area, they have Ellsworth Air Force Base. So they're a military family as well.
Of course. So, Amanda, one last question in regards to the curriculum. How much competition is happening with these kids when the mushers get to, you know, White Mountain and closer to the finish there?
It's not even when they get that far. It's like once they get into about day two or three, it's not even an at-school thing anymore because they automatically just go home and log in and to the Iditarod.com website, and they're doing it themselves. Their parents are saying, you know, I had no idea about the Iditarod, but suddenly he's rushing to find out where my musher is and what my musher is doing and whose musher has, you know, dropped the race. And they come into school so excited in the morning because they want to know, hey, what's your musher doing? What's my musher doing? My musher is beating your musher.
And of course, Robert, the standard school protocol is that 80 to 90% of the female students are going for Allie, and all the boys want to know what Lance Mackey's really like.
That is so not true. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
But they're not allowed to root for me, though. That's like the whole class gets me.
We have to put a restriction on the entire class will follow Hugh together. Like, the teacher will model it as an example using Hugh, because otherwise everybody would want Hugh since they've had the opportunity to meet him. And so that's the important part of the research. They're researching on the website all of the different mushers' biographies, and they get to select. And it's interesting why they select who they select. You know, there's all different reasons. So it's a great thing for them.
Okay, one final question. It just came up. What happens to the kid that had the musher that scratches? Is he done for the rest of the term, or what does he or she have to do?
Well, they're done as far as following their own specific musher, but the expectation is that they are still logging on, they are still following Hugh, they are still checking the weather in Rapid City, checking the weather in Nome, checking the weather in Anchorage, and comparing those weathers. So they're still very much in it.
And that for me, sure. Robert, we've talked about this. For me, you know, when I make a decision to scratch in a race, it's a very difficult decision to make, but when your life's on the line, you're going to do what has to be done best for the dogs. But you realize also in the back of your mind that you're worrying a lot of fans and you're letting down kids, and that's tough to stomach. And it's something you got to teach the kids, though, that they, and I always try to emphasize, is to, you know, persevere. And when you have a rough year and things don't go your way, don't give up, but try to learn from your challenges and try to just become a better you from it.
And the kids, I have to tell you, when a musher scratches and it happens to theirs, they are very concerned. They want to know what happened. Are they okay? Are the dogs okay? That's more what's in their mind.
Right. Cool stuff. You know, I never got the inside scoop of how that whole thing happened. I know, Hugh, you talk a lot about it to the teachers on the that you talk about, but I don't think a lot of fans know how much involved the schools really are with this type of program. And thanks to Target and Exxon and those types of companies that put this together, they do a great job, don't they?
Oh, yeah, and Cabela's. I mean, I'm in this huge conference room at this beautiful Cabela Center. They're just totally taking care of me, man. So, you know, there's so much to go into these races that people really don't know about, and just the volunteers, the corporate interests that help out. And for me, having a fan base that is primarily focused on kids, I tell people kids are the greatest fans in the world, and I wouldn't want to trade my fans with any other mushers.
Right, right. They at least they're not gambling, let's hope.
Who knows? Yeah, maybe with bubble gum. But you have to imagine, Robert, Amanda's school paid me quite a hefty sum to come here, and they raised it by selling bubble gum, so their nickname was the Bubble Gum Kid. And
right. I remember the pictures
come up with
you had posted
nifty ways to raise money to get mushrooms, because they realized that our lifestyle of constant, adventure, yet a lot of work involved, is a great role model to show children that life isn't all about TV and video games.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about tonight with the Cabela's talk. I know you do a lot of talks with school kids and in schools, and of course you do a lot of talks when you go to Germany and other places. How does this type of talk in a more of an open forum type scenario, how does it differ than when you talk to the kids?
Well, this is an outdoor clothing store. This is primarily an outdoor area. Lots of hunters, quite similar to Alaska. In the class this afternoon, I talked with these kids that were in fifth grade, and they're bow hunters. So I think, kids nowadays are evolving, I believe, at a quicker rate with all the information technology at their hands that we didn't have growing up as kids back in the 70s. And so I think that the kids are really a lot more hip to what we're all about than we realize. So I try to be upfront about everything and let them know, what the easier or more difficult parts of mushing and living in Alaska are all about. Obviously, through TV, a lot of these kids are watching different shows about Alaska now. I was at Amanda's last night, and I couldn't go to sleep because I turned on the TV, and, I don't have a TV in my cabin. So I was watching their TV, and, of course, Yukon Men is on TV, and I used to live in Tanana, so I'm watching my buddy Charlie Wright and Stan Duray and all friends from Tanana on TV, and hard to sleep because, this time of year is usually when I'm heading up that way. I love that part of Alaska.
Right, right. So, like you said, a very quick trip down to South Dakota, 3 talks in schools and 1 talk at Cabela's. What's happening to you when you get back? I know race season is quickly approaching. I know you had mentioned on our last show that you want to do the Cusco 300, which is toward the middle of next month. What's on the agenda this year?
I will immediately be jumping on the sled and we'll be heading up on the Taylor, doing some monster runs up there. Anymore, I'm not one of these mushers that has to do 30, 40, 50, 100-mile runs from their kennel. I just want to get out there and do some camping trips and exploring and having fun. And so for me, if I'm not looking at dog mushing as a lifestyle, as a love and not as a business and a job, that's not why I got into dog mushing. I'm doing it just for pure enjoyment, you know that. So I'm going to do some runs with Taylor, and I'll probably do a couple of runs down in Chistochina area, which is where they have the Copper Basin Race. Just getting the dogs prepped for the Cusco, and then the Cusco, of course, will be in mid-January. I'll probably do some river runs as well in the Fairbanks area or up towards Manly, Hot Springs. With the younger dogs I got this year, I've got about 6 to 7 3-year-olds and dogs that need some experience traveling. So we're just going to get them out and show them different parts of Alaska.
Cool. Let's talk about one of your dogs, Hugh, a dog that I met this summer, and I saw a picture of him in Lead just the other day, leaving from your kennel, Doc Holliday. Tell us a little bit about old Doc and how is he progressing since you got him earlier this year?
Well, I actually just got off the phone with my buddy James Wheeler, who's a fellow I raced with 15 years ago. He's doing for Rendezvous and more mid-distance races like the Frank Teasley race there in Wyoming. So the stage stop. So I thought that a dog like Doc was a little bit greener, that didn't have the experience on him, but then James surprised me. I didn't realize that Doc had actually done the the Wyoming stage top race, and he's just a really super talented dog. I don't want to, you know, make predictions or anything, but I don't know. There's just some dogs that are just, I don't know how you describe it. You know, they just have it, whatever that is. And this dog is definitely just has that look in his eyes that, you know, he's special. And every run we go on, there's only one word I say to this dog, and it's chill out, because he's just on fire and kicks up our average miles per hour by 2 to 3 miles an hour, I'd say. But that being said, long distance anymore, unless it's a decent trail, which is few and far between these days, you don't really necessarily need speed to win these races. It's more about just a nice, solid energy, a good, consistent momentum. And so with a dog like him that I'm trying to convert over to the longer miles, it's more just about, you know, getting him to have that same attitude and speed at the end of the run as he has for the first 30 or 40 miles. But he's a little guy, maybe 40 pounds. The other dog I got from James Wheeler is a dog named Laramie, and he's a nice, solid dog as well. So, you know, you have to really, as a musher, sort of contain your enthusiasm, I think. I think the mushers that are blowhards, they're always talking about how great their dogs are usually, you know, not being realistic enough. I know for somebody like me who still has a lot to learn to compete with the Jeff King and Martin Boozers and Alan Moores of the world, I still have a long ways to go. And it's all just about making the magic and keeping that potion going for as long as possible. But I'll tell you what, man, every year I feel like, you know, getting a little bit more of the routine of doing the same races year after year, but I just think there's just going to be an incredible level of excitement this year for the Yukon Quest. And having Jeff and Brent's back and Alan, my buddy Ed Hopkins from Canada, you got Scott Smith coming back, just a really solid field. It's going to be a lot of fun out there.
Any news about either the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest that the listeners and the fans may have missed? Do you know anything that's that may be changing, that may be different than what we've talked about in the past?
Well, yeah, I don't know if you read that article that was in the on the internet, excuse me, last week. But Mark Nordman, you know, who's been running the show in Iditarod with Joanne Potts for years now, they did a great job, from what I hear, of cleaning up the farewell burn and making it a little bit safer. Now we just have to hope that the snow comes through this year. That being said, Farewell Burn hardly ever has snow. But besides that, obviously there's different rules for the Quest as far as our run rest schedules and what our mandatories are. Anymore, though, you know, I get enough attention as it is, dude. So this year, I hope I don't offend other mushers and folks out there, but I'm just going to be totally dialed into my team and focused on what we're about, and not worried about all the soap operas out there. Lord knows I had enough of those last year.
Yeah, they're definitely enough to fill the pages, and I think every musher has his own story to ravel, I guess is the right word. And it's not necessarily the best thing for the sport, is it?
No, but it's humans. You know, you go and read any article on the web nowadays, and then you go underneath it, and there's a couple hundred people being narcissistic and being judgmental about whatever and being nitpicky about what that person's doing. And yet, a lot of the articles, I know they were written about me last year. I know the people that wrote them personally, and we have histories. And you have to realize that a lot of these people that are writing stuff are getting paid not to write happy articles. They're getting paid to, you know, try to belittle others. That's just the way of the media these days. It's sad, but it's not what I'm about, and I'm not going to let the way these people act ever affect the way I act. That's who they are, and
right.
I am who I am. And as long as the kids are happy with what I'm doing, that's all that really matters. And the dogs, of course.
Is Amanda still there?
Oh, yeah.
Hi.
Hi. How do you go about this, Amanda, as a fan of mushing? Obviously, you're very enthusiastic as a school teacher, how do you see it as just a fan? What is your favorite part about mushing? Is it the mushers themselves? Is it the dog? Is it the competition? What is it for you as a fan?
It's more the, well, personally, because I know Hugh, I like to follow him. I've met some of the other mushers, and they're all fabulous, and everything that I've seen and heard of them, they're absolutely wonderful and great role models for the kids. And so that's what I typically look for. And when I talk to the kids about it, and when I'm logging on at home, I'm always rooting for the ones that I've either met or I know personally. It's about the dogs. It's about the love of the dogs, the care of the dogs. The dogs are always so excited. They're happy. They're bouncing. They're pulling. They're wanting to go. I guess I'll get into it for.
Have you had a chance to be on a dog sled yourself?
When I was up at the teacher conference in July, I was on the back of Vern Halter's, what is it, an ATV?
Yeah.
Back
right.
of Vern Halter's ATV. Yep, yep. So I was able to do that, but never in the snow and never just me.
Well, you know, you do have family here in Alaska. Next time you come up, what is it, Hugh, a couple of hundred miles from Tope to Fairbanks?
Yeah, she's got a granddaughter in Fairbanks, so she's definitely going to be up in Alaska here soon.
Yeah, I'll be up there in June and July.
Well, you got to make a winter trip so we can get you on a sled in the snow, and you'll really feel what it's about.
That would be awesome, but it's going to have to be quite a few years after I retire, I'm afraid.
That's okay. The dogs will be around for sure. Hugh, we have
54
minutes before we close. Anything else you want to mention before the end of the show here?
Like I always said, if any folks are ever either passing through Tope or if they're going to be passing through, feel free to stop in for a visit to the kennel, visit with the pups. If you're into it, we could even take you out for a short dog ride. Nicole put on Facebook today that we're getting snow in Tope right now, which is nice. It's a low snow year, but yes, humans, you know, we really can't complain about the weather. It is what it is. These guys, from what I hear, have a lot worse weather than we get sometimes. They say here in South Dakota, the snow doesn't come down, it blows sideways.
Right, right. Yeah, I've raced there at Hill City several times when they used to have the race for the gold there in Hill City many years ago. And it is kind of an interesting weather pattern there in South Dakota for sure.
Yeah, that's actually the lady from Cabela's, Kendra Lee, is in the room with us right now, Robert, and she's actually from Hill City, and she's nodding her head back and forth. So
right.
It's definitely beautiful country here. I'm hoping next year when I come through that I can actually bring 4 or 5 dogs and actually do a dog mushing demonstration for the kids here. I think they'd really be into it.
I think so, too. You know, any way we can promote the sport in a positive light, I think that's what we need. As you mentioned, there's so much negativity out there in the media, and, you know, kids, they're still innocent. They still need to follow their dreams. I know that's what you teach at your conferences, you, and, you know, make sure that they know how to persevere and take risks and follow after those rewards, but not at the stake of somebody else. That's kind of your motto, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just really even bigger than dog mushing. It's about getting out in the woods and enjoying the world, you know. You're from the Denver area. I'm from Chicago, so we know what the whole city life is like. And a lot of these kids want to emulate the Kardashians or some of these people on the reality TV shows. And I try to teach them that being famous ain't a great thing. It's living your dreams and being real with life is what it should be about.
Very cool. Well, Hugh, thanks a lot for joining us. Amanda, nice to meet you here on the show. Take care of those kids and enjoy the Iditarod this year, okay?
Thanks so much.
All right,
thank
Robert.
You.
Hugh, we'll talk
when you get back. So on behalf of our guests today, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.